is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, I'm Dan Krikorian.
And I'm Patrick Carney.
And we're Slapping Glass. And you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, jumping on to talk some NBA playoffs. Two pretty disappointing games tonight, I would say, Jay.
Yeah, I'm really mad that we didn't record last night, Mike, because I felt like last night's games were way better than tonight's games. Obviously, I mean, they clearly were way better than tonight's games. Not even like a question, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to talk about here. These two games, we can obviously discuss the two series, which we will. But clearly, last night's games were more compelling, although I think one of those series is clearly over, and the other one, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. So we got to start with our trivia, though, Mike. So this weekend, this is going to be the only mention of it, because I really don't want to spend any time on it, is Jokic got named as the MVP. Congratulations, Jokic. All right, so I've got two questions revolving around that, Mike. Only three of the last 19 MVPs have won a championship in the same season. Can you name them?
In the last 19 years, so that takes me back to 2003 or so?
Yep. I won't even make you give me a year, Mike. I'll just let you give me my...
Let's see. I'm going to guess, man, that's a tough one. Curry won in 2015.
Oh, man, you got the year, too. I'm impressed.
Well, I was just trying to go through. So okay. Curry wins that one. I don't know. Did LeBron get one in Miami?
He got two in Miami.
In all right, both so is that three? Is that all
yeah,
three
that's
of them?
Three, yep. There's okay. three.
All right, so I got 2013. Good job.
Okay. All right.
Good job. All right. So the other question in regards to Jokic winning the MVP, there have been five centers in NBA history that have won multiple MVPs. One of them is Jokic. Name the other four. Now I feel like this is a softball. So you better
five
get this.
Center five centers
have multiple MVPs, and Jokic is one of them.
Okay. Kareem.
Okay.
Wilt.
Yep.
Russell.
Yep.
And I need one more. So it's either Shaq or Akeem.
It's neither of those people.
It's neither of those people that's won multiple MVPs. Moses?
Moses is the other one. Good job, Mike.
All right. Okay.
All right. And then my other trivia questions, I have two more. They're quick ones. Two more. They're both centered around Al Horford.
God. All right.
So last night, Al Horford became the second Celtic in NBA, in their career season, I shouldn't say NBA, in their existence, to score 30 points at the age of 35 and older. Who is the other Celtic to score 30 points in a playoff game? And he did it at the age of 37.
Scored 30 at the age of 37.
In a playoff game.
Really old, no longer playing, or semi recent?
He did not play in my lifetime. I do not believe. I don't have his end date. Let me just look over real quick. Hold on.
Dave Collins? John Havlicek.
John Havlicek is the correct answer. Good job, Mike.
Okay.
He didn't play in my lifetime, right?
Probably not.
No. There's no way. Unless he played till he's 86. I mean, he would have been at the end of his career. Hold on.
Havlicek was done by the 70s.
No, he was done in 78.
He was done in the 70s, yeah. There you go. He was done in the 70s.
All right, so there's the one. And then that was the hard, in my opinion, that was the harder of the two. Although this next one might be difficult because there's three possible answers, and you got to narrow it to two. Jason Tatum and Al Horford are the first Celtics teammates to score 30 points since these two players did it in a playoff game in 2011. So you've got it narrowed to three players, Mike. Maybe four. But I'm guessing you can narrow it down to three. You got to pick the right two.
So give me I need two guys that scored 30 in a playoff game.
30 points in a playoff game in the year 2011. Or 2011.
LeBron and Wade.
No. Celtics.
Oh, Celtics. Celtics in 2011.
Yeah.
Pierce and Allen.
There you go. Good job, Mike. Good work. I'm proud of you tonight. You were like 4-for-4.
Not bad. I was in the ballpark on all of them.
Yeah. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Mike. I'm proud of you. So we're going to start briefly talking about the games tonight. And I don't think we're going to talk too much about this. Maybe I'm wrong. And I really don't want to beat a dead horse on the whole Harden thing. But listen, I'm going to give the man the due to start here, Mike. In the game Saturday or Sunday night that I did not watch because I was too busy watching Doctor Strange with my father, he decided to play in the fourth quarter and just go crazy. So congrats, James Harden. You showed what you used to be. You are not that player, except for the fact that you still stink in the playoffs other than one game. The Sixers have zero chance of winning this series. I just don't see it. I know they came back and won games 3 and 4. And the Doc Rivers outcoached Spoelstra in game 4. But that game tonight
was back to what I expected to happen. Now, could the Sixers win Game 6? Yes. Do I think there's any chance that the Sixers win Game 7 on the road after watching what I saw tonight? The answer is no. I told Mike before we started recording, I turned the game off at like 2 or 3 minutes into the third quarter. I couldn't even watch it anymore. It was terrible. It was a bad to watch. So congrats to the Heat. I think you looked really good tonight. Obviously Lowry's compromised. Duncan Robinson's kind of nowhere to be found. I don't quite get this, but I think there's no chance that the Sixers win this series. And that's really all I have to say. And I don't know what they do in the offseason because I can't imagine
wanting James Harden for $250 million.
They're going to have to because now they gave away their big asset. I mean, not that Ben Simmons is a big asset because he hasn't played. But I'm just saying, like, I don't see how you don't, like, sign him because you kind of pot committed here, in my opinion. Unfortunately for the Sixers,
hometown discount.
He's not Jose Ramirez coming through that door, buddy.
Harden, 4 years, $70 million.
Free membership to the local club, if you know what I mean.
Four years, $70 million. Does Harden say no?
Yes. Yes, someone will pay him more than that. Detroit might pay him more than that.
How much more?
I don't know. Detroit might pay him more than that.
How much more would you pay him?
I'm not saying how much would I pay him. I'm saying someone.
I'm asking if you owned a team or you were a GM.
I'd pay him zero.
How much would you pay him?
I wouldn't want him on my team. I'd pay him zero. I'm telling you, there is a team who will pay him more because of two things. One, they need to do something to get, you know, to get fans in the seats. And I'm not saying that it's the most exciting thing in the world to see James Harden play, as clearly it's been told that I don't like watching him play basketball. There is a fan base that enjoys James Harden.
There is?
Oh, yes.
Where?
Mike, I'm telling you.
Do you see any kids rocking a James Harden jersey?
I've seen kids.
Do you see a lot of kids wearing the James Harden Adidas sneakers?
No, I don't. I see a lot of kids playing James Harden step back three crap. That's what I see.
That's Steph.
Oh no! They're doing the little extra step, and then they don't sit. They say they're not traveling. I'm telling you, someone will pay him, Mike.
Okay, Philly would be insane to offer him anywhere near what he's going to be eligible for. And if they do, I guess you can always say, right, that at this point, any contract can be movable and tradable under the right circumstances. But that deal is going to be, it's going to be horrendous. I said it last week. It's going to be the worst contract ever, maybe in professional sports by the end of it. But even in year one, if this is what Harden is, what are you getting? Like, he was really good the other day. I told you the fourth quarter. Maybe I give him a new nickname, Jimmy Harden.
When you sent me that text, obviously I was in the movie, so I didn't know exactly what you were talking about. I thought maybe you were talking about Jimmy Butler, did a terrible or something.
Harden came up. Look, he played really well in the fourth quarter in game four, and that's really been his one shining moment in these five games so far. And he's a completely different player than he was at his apex, where at this point he just can't really get by anybody.
Mike, I just want to be clear. I want to tell you something.
Okay.
According to sales, James Harden jersey is number two. Number two. And this was reported on April 22nd, 2022.
How many kids does Daryl Morey have?
No, I'm just telling you, number two. Number one all is right. LeBron still.
All right. Phew, that is, well, good luck, America.
I'm just telling you.
Look, that's fine. I believe it. The stats don't lie in that case. Look, I would not pay James Harden. I'm with you. I would not pay him anything. I would not want the guy anywhere near my team. I do think that theoretically, if he reinvented himself as a guy, he's still a really good passer. And he's still a guy that can help your team in some way. But with his track record as a guy who quits on teams when things aren't going well, with his track record as a slightly less than clutch playoff performer, a guy who hasn't over the course of his career been known for his high fitness level as he continues to age, I just would not want to pay him for what I'm going to get. So Philly, who knows? They traded a bunch of stuff out to get him. And if you let him walk, you can't really replace him with somebody of a similar salary just because of the way the salary cap rules are. So it seems likely they're going to sign him. But if I'm Joel Embiid and I'm tying the next few years of my prime to James Harden, it's a little bit scary. It's a little bit scary. And Maxey's been really good, but I don't think Maxey is – he's not your number two. You're not winning a title with Tyrese Maxey as your number two guy. And I don't know. I don't know what Philly does. In this series, I know what they do. They're going to lose the series. Maybe they come back home and maybe they win that game. Tonight, to come out and get beat by 35 in a critical game –
where was on just, South Beach last night.
You just don't show up. I mean, you just don't show up. And they shoot 36% from the field. They go 9 of 32 from 3. Maxey and Tobias Harris combined for what? They ended up being 7 for 24 from the field. That's not getting it done. Embiid only takes 12 shots. He's got to shoot a lot more than that. He's got to get more opportunities than that. And Miami's doing a really good job, right? They're denying him the ball, and which you don't see very often with a big 7'2", 7'3" center, where you got guys out in a denial stance trying to keep him from getting the ball. And it's working because he's having to work really hard even to catch the ball, let alone be able to score once he catches it. And so you often see that strategy used with a wing, or you see guys picking up point guards full court to try to tire them out. And Miami's kind of just doing a similar thing to Embiid as a center, where they're just making him work to get the ball. And it's been effective to this point. It's been effective. Even in the games in Philly, I thought it was effective that they made him work a little harder. Embiid didn't put up 35 or 40. And again, he's hurt. I get it. But that's been his track record, is that he's been hurt. Harden's track record tells you that he's probably not going to come through in big moments. I think Miami goes into Philly and finishes this thing off. I don't think it comes back to Miami. If for some reason it does, Miami's going to win that game 7. And I'm not super impressed with Miami, in all honesty. I mean, you look at the fact that they're starting Gabe Vincent and Max Strus. Kudos to those guys. They've played really well, but I'm not sure that I'm that worried about them when we start looking at the next series, which we'll talk about how we think that's going to go. But I think Miami wins game 6, and if for some reason Philly sneaks out game 6 at home, I think Miami finishes them out. I don't think there's any way Philly wins this series.
I think it's over. I think it's over. I think Miami wins game 6.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I don't need to spend any more. We don't need to spend any more time on this. We'll
move on.
We're moving on. All right. The other game tonight. Oof. It looked like a close game. And then all of a sudden it wasn't close anymore. Coach of the year, Monty Williams. Congrats, Coach Monty Williams. Clearly out coaching Jason Kidd. And they just had a better game plan. And listen, there is one thing I do want to talk about, Mike. I don't know if you want to spend a long time on this. This flagrant foul garbage is getting out of hand. It's getting out of hand now. Did you see the foul that they called for a flagrant foul in the third quarter here?
I did not see the third quarter foul.
It was clearly it was a hard playoff foul. It's what I would classify as a hard playoff foul. Like,
Don't think he had any ill intent. Nothing. And they called it a flagrant. I'm over it, Mike. I'm over it. I understand, like, the Dylan Brooks one, that I feel like that was clearly flagrant. Okay, the Draymond Green, clearly, you know, I could make an argument for it being flagrant, okay? This one, I just don't get it. And I'm kind of at the point where it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like the NFL when, like, if you touch the quarterback now, it's roughing the passer in a way that even, like, you can't fall your, like, I think the funniest in football, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but, like, was when a quarterback gets tackled and the player who's running at him at 15 miles an hour or whatever, however fast he's running it, at 280 pounds, and he's not allowed to land on the quarterback. Like, that's crazy to me. It's kind of like that. Like, I don't understand. The NBA needs to figure this out. I think this is something that needs to be discussed in the off season, in my opinion.
I don't like going to replay on all of them where you have these long delays. Every time there's a play where a guy goes up and there's contact, feels like they're going to the replay to check to see whether or not it's flagrant. And most of the time it's pretty clear in real time whether or not it's a true flagrant foul. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I get the idea that you want to make sure that you're getting the calls correct, which is obviously the reason behind going to instant replay at all. But when you're going to the replay on every single foul and looking at it and going, did this guy swing his arm? What's his intent? Where's he going? It gets to the point where it just becomes completely ridiculous. And I think that's where we've reached at this point. It just doesn't make any sense. Let's stop going to the replay. If you can't officiate it in real time, then let's just move on. I think the same thing with the block charge call. It's such a difficult call to make in the moment. And yet I think most of the times the officials get it right. And if they don't, even if you go to replay, you can still probably make a case for, oh, that could have been a charge, or oh, that could have been a block, even when you're looking at it in slow motion on replay. So let's just go with the guy's initial impression and move on. Basketball was fine without instant replay for however many number of years. And I just think we're going to that replay booth way, way, way too much. On a out of bounds play in the last 2 minutes where you're trying to see who the ball's, who's it going off of. Okay, fine. I can live with that, but I don't need to see every single,
Mike.
I know. I don't need to, those are the only plays that need reviewing. I don't need to see a block charge reviewed. I don't need to see every single time there's physical contact between a defender and an offensive player, every time a guy has his arm out, that we're going to the replay to see whether or not it was flagrant. It's getting to the point where it takes away from the game. I don't need to see the officials staring into the camera and telling me that it's a flagrant or it's a common foul or whatever. Let's just play it, move on, call it in real time, and keep the game moving. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. As far as the game is concerned, Mike, Phoenix just had a masterclass. They now move to 53-0, Mike, 53-0 when having a lead after three quarters this season.
It's pretty impressive.
Luka had only two assists tonight. That's his fewest in his playoff career.
He didn't get a whole lot of help from anybody except Brunson tonight.
Yep. The Suns have not lost three games in a row all season long. Continues. It was a three-point game at halftime, and it ended up being a 22-point game after the three quarters. So, just impressive stuff from the Suns tonight, especially in that third quarter. And you got to give it to them. Like, listen. I jokingly text with you after game four, are you going to switch back to the Mavericks? Because, you know, they'd won the two games to make it 2-2. And unfortunately, I didn't get you on the record before this game tonight. So I'm thinking you're probably going to stick with the Suns. I'm going to be my guess. I think I said last week that they were going to win in seven, right? I said the Mavericks are going to win in seven. I think I went Mavericks and seven in all. I went like the away team winning all except for the Miami series, because I didn't think it was going to go seven. So I'm going to stick with the Mavs in seven, Mike, just because I don't want to jump off the ship yet.
I think the Mavs have a much better chance of making that happen than the 76ers do. Let's put it that way.
Well, the 76ers have zero chance. I think the Mavericks Dallas like goes a 10% back, chance, but I'm going to pick them anyways.
When Dallas goes back home, their role players hopefully play better, shoot the ball a little bit better, and that gives them an opportunity to beat Phoenix. Chris Paul had two terrible games in game three and game four, and he was much better tonight. Not perfect, but not a huge Chris Paul game, but not a negative Chris Paul game, which is kind of what we got in games three and four. Booker was really good tonight in the first half, shot the ball really well, and kind of got them, kept them in it as Luka was having a really good first half. I think he had, 20 or 18, something like that in the first half.
It was 18, yeah.
And was kind of doing pretty much whatever he wanted on the floor. And I think the belief in Dallas comes back to the fact that Luka has to be the best player on the floor in a given game in order for Dallas to have a chance. And they got to shoot the ball the way they did back in Dallas. And tonight they shot it. They were, well, right now with the 10 seconds to go, they're 8 for 32 from three. So if Dallas goes 8 for 32 from three, they're not winning any game, let alone a playoff game against Phoenix, who's been the best team in the league the whole season. So they got to shoot it better. I expect them to shoot it better back in Dallas. I think the series goes seven. I still think Phoenix probably wins it, but because you have Luka, who is the best player in the series, gives you a fight, gives you a puncher's chance in game seven if you're Dallas. I'd still pick Phoenix, but I think Dallas goes home and gets game six. They shoot it better. The role players play a little bit better. And that gives them an opportunity to take it back to Phoenix. And who knows? Maybe you get a 45 or 50 point game out of Luka and one or two other guys, Finney Smith or Brunson, bangs home some threes and You end up getting upset. But I think Dallas wins game six, and then Phoenix comes home and wins game seven.
Okay. Fair points, but I'm gonna stick with the Mavs, Mike.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, let's talk about the real series because the one real series. Let's leave that for last. Okay.
Sure.
Zha's out. Warriors are moving on. It's over. This is gonna end tomorrow.
Has he officially been ruled out for game five?
He's been ruled out for the rest of the series with a let me get the exact wording. I thought I saw he's been ruled out with a bone bruise to his knee. Hold on. Woj, where's Woj? Thanks. Fact checking myself with Woj. Ja Morant has a bone bruise in his knee and is expected to miss the rest of the playoffs, the Grizzly announced.
Yeah. That series was over even if Ja's playing, I think.
Well, if the Memphis would have won last night, they had, the game was right there for them. They had the lead for 47 minutes.
Right, but now that they've lost, I don't think there's any way, Ja or no Ja, I don't think they're winning three in a row against the Warriors, even though they'd have two of those games at home. And Memphis is such a weird team because whatever their record was, 20-2 without Ja during the regular season. So clearly they found a way to play without him during the regular season. And last night, that game was there for them to win without Ja. But I think what I come away from the first five games of this series thinking is that I'm not really sure how good Golden State is. I think Memphis is a good young team, but I don't think Memphis is anywhere near an NBA Finals contender. And Golden State, other than game four, Golden State didn't really put them away and has kind of struggled with them. And so when I look ahead and I say, okay, what's Golden State going to do with Phoenix or Dallas, or what are they going to do with Milwaukee or Boston or Miami, I guess. I'm not sure Golden State has what it takes to be to win an NBA title. I don't think they get there. I don't think they get to the NBA Finals. But I do think they beat Memphis. They're not going to lose this series. I think they get the next game. I think this game four was Memphis's chance to steal one, get back in the series, and now, hey, we got two out of the last three at home and we can power through with Ja. But being down 3-1, no Ja, I don't see how they pull this off.
I agree. It's over. Done. I think it ends tomorrow. And done.
But Golden State, what are they at this point? Draymond doesn't shoot and has become a near, I don't want to say non-factor on offense, because he still is a good passer and he still is kind of integral to what they do in terms of their ball movement and dribble handoffs and screening. But the fact that the guy doesn't want to shoot, it doesn't matter that much right now, but eventually in the next round or certainly in the NBA Finals, him being just a complete non-factor on offense in terms of scoring is going to be very important. And then you look and you say, what do you get from Wiggins game to game? Do you have any idea?
No, but I'm just going to say I'm still picking the Warriors to come out of the West, Mike.
Man, I don't see it. I just don't see it. Klay is not anywhere near what Klay was. And that's not to say that he can't have a good shooting game every once in a while, but he's nowhere near the athlete that he was prior to those two injuries, which is not unexpected, but it's just a reality. He's just not as good. And do I trust Otto Porter? Do I want to see a lot of Kevon Looney? Poole's been really, really good, but I don't know, defensively he's a liability. I don't see this team as being a true championship contender. To me, they're not as good. They're not as good as Phoenix. I don't think they're as good as Dallas. I know they're not as good as Milwaukee or Boston. And I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't think they have enough with the way their team is constituted right now to win a seven-game series against Phoenix, Milwaukee, or Boston. I just don't. I don't think they have enough. I don't think defensively they're not tough enough. I don't think they have enough to match up with those teams. And on offense, night to night, I'm not sure what I'm getting. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Steph to have huge games in order for them to win. And not that he's not capable of doing that, but Curry having a huge game at his size, we've seen it in the finals where he can be good, but he's just not physically dominant the way a LeBron was or the way Giannis is now. It's just not as easy for him to do those kinds of things and have those huge games and carry his team. I don't think Golden State gets to the finals. I think they lose to most likely Phoenix, or I think even Dallas beats them.
Okay. Before we talk Celtics, Bucks, breaking news, The NBA has announced that Bob Lanier passed away at the age of 73 following a short illness.
Do you know what Bob Lanier was most famous for?
I don't know. I was going to read the statement from Adam Silver.
Huge feet.
Oh, yeah.
He was known for having, I forget what his size, but at the time, just massive feet was what Bob, I mean, Bob Lanier was a great, great player. Don't get me wrong. It's not just the fact that he had large feet. Tremendous player and important in the history of the NBA. But when I think of Bob Lanier, the first thing I think of is a guy with huge feet.
All right.
Our condolences to Bob Lanier's family.
So I just thought that I thought that was relevant. So I thought I would share that before we discussed this basketball game that we're going to discuss now, the Celtics and the Bucks. Okay, so I know you didn't watch it live, or you didn't watch? Did you not watch the second half live, Mike?
I ended up watching the whole thing live.
Oh, did you not go to the play?
We went to the play, but I had the phone in the car on the way to the play, because it was, by the time we got in the car to go to the play, there was only about 6 minutes left, and so we just ended up it ended up working out. And
watch game three. When you originally watched it, did you think that shot counted or not?
No, I did not think it counted.
Okay, I didn't either. I didn't think it was even close, to be honest with you. So all right, so we're in agreement on that. Then last night, the Al Horford game. I mean, that was crazy.
Two straight Al Horford games. Two straight.
The bad one and then the good one?
No, the good one. There was two straight. Horford was awesome in both of these last two games.
Oh, I only caught bits and pieces because I was, like you said, you were going to the play. I ended up going to a movie with my kids. So I didn't see, I only saw the last, like, minute and a half of the Milwaukee Celtics game on Saturday.
Horford was incredible in that game. He was incredible, obviously, in game four. I don't know what word you want to use to describe how he played in game four, but he was, I would have said in game three, he was as good as Al Horford could possibly ever have been, and he was twice as good in game four.
I thought Al Horford was channeling LeBron when Giannis got that technical, which that was bad technical, personally.
Oh, that was terrible. I have no idea what he said, but he said like four words. So that was ridiculous.
One of those words was probably four letters long.
Maybe, but still,
I think that was a weak technical. Anyways, but once that happened, Al Horford, I don't know, he was like possessed by LeBron's spirit animal after that. When he's shaking his head at him, I'm like, oh, snap. I thought either Giannis is going to do something, or I just didn't know. And then the dunk that he had on Giannis, oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. Like, I didn't even know that Al Horford would.
Didn't know he could dunk?
No, I knew he could dunk. I didn't think he had it in him to drive from the 3-point line to dunk it with the velocity and the vigor and the anger that he dunked that basketball. I was super impressed.
The scary part was that when he would pick and pop, and especially when Lopez was in there and sticking in the lane, and Horford pops out to the 3-point line, and he's just standing there, and you're watching it going, I know that's going in. And that's not a feeling that at this point in his career I ever thought that I would have.
Well, listen,
watching Al Horford again.
Let's be honest, Mike. Even when the Cavs were playing him 5 years ago, I wanted Al Horford taking those shots, right?
That's what I'm saying. I never would have guessed that he was going to be a guy that was going to just bang home threes where he's letting it go and you're like, that's going in. I know it's going in before he even releases it. And that's the way it felt in that game the other night. And I think what was so interesting about that game and what's been interesting about this series is there's moments, there's possessions, there's quarters where you watch it and you're like, I don't know how either team is getting a basket. Like, it's just so hard to score.
It's a very physical series. Like,
the first quarter of game four, I thought both teams defensively were so locked in. And there were some open shots. There were some open threes. And I think if you were a fan of either team, you were probably watching that game going to yourself, man, if we could just do anything offensively, we should be up like 20 in this first quarter. Because both teams were playing so well defensively that it felt like if either one of them could have gotten going offensively, that they could have jumped out to a big lead. And Milwaukee had a little bit. They got out maybe by 8, and then Boston cut it back down. But it felt like Milwaukee should have had a huge, huge lead. And conversely, you could have been a Celtics fan and thought the Celtics had played a little bit better offensively in that first quarter. They could have had an advantage because the defense was just – it was so good. They were making it so hard, each team on the other, to try to score. You just – there's nothing – there was nothing available in the lane. And yet, as you look and go through the entirety of that game, Boston had 3 or 4 times where – and this was over the course of the game, not necessarily in one stretch, but over the course of the game, they had 3 or 4 uncontested layups where a guy broke through and Milwaukee didn't rotate or got confused on the rotations or on the screen coverages, and boom, all of a sudden, guys were right at the basket laying it in uncontested. And those are important baskets. And then you look at the fourth quarter of that game. Milwaukee goes into the fourth up 80-73 and really had dominated the third quarter. And it felt like, again, they probably should have been up more. Giannis was just incredible in that third quarter, getting to the basket and Euro stepping his way by everybody. And you go into that quarter and Boston comes out. I think they maybe scored the first 8 or 10. I can't remember. And for the quarter, they shot 16 of 19 from the field and put up 43 points. If you'd have looked at the first quarter of that game and said, hey, one of these two teams is going to get 43 points in a quarter, you would have said, man, you're crazy. But when you shoot 16 for 19, it's pretty easy to put up big numbers.
So I have some more stats for you, Mike.
Okay.
The courtesy of StatMuse and ESPN Stats and Info, I wanted to share with you about this. In the playoffs, Giannis has missed 36 free throws. The Celtics as a team has missed 31. I know Giannis gets to the line a lot, but I thought that was interesting. This one was more interesting. When Giannis is guarded by Al Horford versus when he's guarded by any other Celtic. When he's guarded by any other Celtic, Giannis is shooting 35 of 65 for 53.8%. When Giannis is guarded by Al Horford, he is 15 of 49 for 30.6%. We sit here talking about Horford's offensive game. That's pretty darn good. Like, a 35-year-old guy holding Giannis to 15 of 49. I mean, that's impressive, right? If I would have said, name the player, would have you guessed Horford just because you know Horford's been guarding him? Would have you known that? Would you expect that, I guess, is the question, Mike.
Well, I don't think you'd expect it going into the series. I think if you watch the series, you realize that Horford has done a really good job. I think when you talk about what Giannis has or hasn't done against anybody, Horford has done as good a job as you could possibly expect anybody to do, let alone a guy who's 35 years old who last year in Oklahoma City, most people thought his career was over. And basically, I think when Oklahoma City and Boston swapped the Kemba Walker, Al Horford, it was basically, I think, looked at as that's kind of a contract swap and not a move that was going to materially impact really either team. And that's obviously proven not to be the case. And so having watched the series, I'm not surprised that those are the stats. And I do think that when you look at some of the shots that Giannis has gotten against Horford, there were a few times at various stretches during the game where, and not just Game 4, but across the series, where Giannis has gotten by Horford and then missed a couple easy bunnies that might have made a difference in that field goal percentage. I feel like he's missed some shots that he normally makes. And clearly, when he shoots threes, I don't know who gets credit for that when you're guarding him. But, I mean, he should never take another three in this entire series unless it's like a 20-point lead and you're just kind of goofing around. But in real time, in real minutes, I'm not sure why he's ever taking a three. And yet at the same time, in the half court set, it's still somewhat difficult. It's way easier. If you go back to our conversation on the podcast 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we talked a lot about, well, how does Giannis get to the rim when there's five guys standing in there and he's got to be able to shoot it and these different kinds of things. And I do think he's much, much improved on his mid-range game. I don't mind him taking that 17-footer when they back way off him. I'm totally fine with him taking that shot if I'm Milwaukee. And he also can get into the post and score. And then obviously he's got the ability if he gets on the move and he's got the Euro step and he's just getting around people. And he's been relentless. The problem has been that he just, without Middleton, he just doesn't have any help creating anything. And Jrue Holiday has his moments, and he's been good at times in this series, and at other times in this series, he's been really bad. And when you watch Holiday, he's always, and we talked about this last year, he's always just kind of loose with his dribble. It always feels like it could be poked away at any moment. Even when he gets in for layups and there's nobody there, it still feels like he could miss it or he does miss it. And they need more from him than what I think he's capable of giving them. I mean, I think he can give it to them on a game-by-game basis where maybe one game you get good Drew's knocking down threes and getting to the basket, but I don't think he's going to put together seven games in a row where he's clearly going to be your guy that's going to get you 20 and 8 every game. He's going to play good defense, no question about that. But as far as being the second banana offensively, I think he lacks a little bit, and that's where Milwaukee really misses Middleton. Because you look at the rest of their roster, and there's just nobody else to create anything. Giannis is creating pretty much everything that's happening, and they got to knock down shots. And when they don't around him, things just get even tighter. And all that being said, their defense collapsing in the fourth quarter the other day and giving up 43 points. That was rough. That was rough. And I don't know. I don't know where this series goes because I don't have a good feel. I'm not still. I know Tatum had 30, but I don't know how you feel about it. But do you feel certain that
it's a seven game series?
Do you feel certain that you're going to get great Jason Tatum in all three of these next three games? No. I agree. And that to me is where if I'm Boston, that's what makes me a little bit nervous because I'm going to need a great Tatum and or a great Jaylen Brown in two of those games if I'm going to beat Giannis and the Bucks. And I still watch those guys and they're just inconsistent enough to make me wonder if they have enough to close out the Bucks even without Middleton.
Yeah, I think the Bucks win in seven, Mike. I'm going to stick with it. I said it last week. I'm sticking with it. I think the Bucks win in seven. I think they're going to, one way or another, it's going to go seven games. Listen, the Warriors series is not going seven games. I wouldn't be surprised if the rest of the series go seven games. I think the 76ers is probably the second least likely to go seven games. And I think the Mavericks series and the Celtics series go seven games. Now, I will go with my old adage. The NBA wants as many games as possible. It would be really nice if both those games go seven, series go seven, because then they won't have an off night with basketball. Because they're on opposite days. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, Mike. Just stating the facts here. I think both those series go seven. I think they definitely want this game series to go seven. I think they were the NBA cash cow was really sad when that Brooklyn Celtics series only went four. So I'm just saying I think this is going seven, one way or another. Seven games, Mike.
Does Milwaukee, who wins game five? Does Boston win game five?
I think it's going to be a home and home. I think Boston's going to win game five, and Milwaukee's going to win game six. Now, if Milwaukee wins game five, I think it's over in six. If Boston wins game five, it's going to go seven, and I'm taking Milwaukee.
I think that's fair.
I don't see any way that the Celtics win game six in Milwaukee do or die for Milwaukee. I just don't see it.
I agree with you there. I think that it either goes six and Milwaukee wins, or it goes seven. If it goes seven, to me, it's a toss-up. I think if you're a Bucks fan and it goes seven, you're just saying, we've got the best guy. Giannis is going to put up 40 and do whatever it takes to win. And if you're Boston, you're saying, we're at home. We've got the better collective of players. Our collective is going to beat their one best player. And I think both teams have a legitimate argument to be made when we get to game seven. I think the Bucks win it. I'm going to say Bucks in six. I think they get game five in Boston, and then I think they come home and finish them off. I just think Giannis is going to figure out a way to do it. I think that some of their other guys are going to make a few shots, and that's going to be enough to carry them in it. I just don't trust Boston. I think without Time Lord, I'm guessing he's going to be out again. I don't know if you've seen
knee
anything.
Knee soreness was yesterday. I don't know about the game tomorrow.
So. Seems unlikely he's going to be back at full capacity anyway. And they didn't really miss him all that much. It didn't feel like. I didn't feel, although the Tice minutes were pretty bad. Tice didn't do a whole lot positive for the Celtics. So if you're a Milwaukee fan, I think the more Tice you get out there, the better. I'd much rather see him out there if I'm a Bucks fan than Robert Williams. And I'm sure if you're a Boston fan, you'd much rather see Time Lord than Tice. So That's a big injury. And Milwaukee just has to – they have to get more production from their secondary guys. And Giannis has to do – it sounds scary to say, but he's probably got to do – even more. He's got to be close to that. He gets, 32 yesterday and shot, I think, 14 of 32, if I'm not mistaken, from the floor. He's probably got to be closer to that same number of shots, but he's got to make, instead of making 14 of them, he's probably got to make 19 or 20 of those 32. And look, eliminate the threes, finish a couple more layups around the rim, get to the line a few more times, make a couple more free throws. Is he capable of doing it? We've seen him do it on the biggest stage, and I anticipate that he's going to have a huge game tomorrow night, and I think Milwaukee wins game five and then goes on and closes him out in game six. And then you look forward. I think the Milwaukee, most likely Miami. I don't think – again, the Bucks are just – they're such a weird team because I think it's hard for them to score without Middleton. Hopefully at some point they get Middleton back. And I think if you put Middleton back in this lineup, I still think they're the best team. I still think they're probably the title favorite, no matter who comes out of the West, if they get Middleton back. I think without Middleton, offensively, they're going to have patches where it gets tough because Giannis can only do.
You're relying on Grayson Allen to not get him to do a stupid thing. So
and you're relying on Connaughton to make shots. You're relying on there's a lot of George Hill minutes in the fourth quarter the other night that I'm not sure. Without Middleton, Coach Bud he's reaching deep to try to figure out what can he do. And he probably left Lopez on the floor maybe even longer than
he should have
when Horford is banging home those threes. And credit to Boston, they played really well. Smart was really good in the fourth quarter. And Jaylen Brown's been almost, I would say, other than this game, I think he's probably been better than Tatum.
I agree.
During this series. Any different kind of player. Jaylen Brown's not – he's much more of a just, I'm a scorer, and he's not necessarily setting guys up, but he's played for the type of player that Jaylen Brown is. He's played, I think, better than Tatum going into this – at this point in the series. And thankfully for Tatum, he came up and played well in that fourth quarter. Because he was really, it was looking a little dicey for Tatum there for a couple in game three and even through the beginning of game four. It was
5-19, right, in game three, I think, or something like that.
It was a struggle for a guy who people were kind of saying after that Brooklyn series that he'd arrived as a top 10 player in the league, maybe even a top 5 player in the league. And I'm still not buying that. I don't see that in any way, shape, or form. I think he's a really, really good player, but I don't see a guy who night in, night out, you're gonna pencil this guy in for 30 and 10. It's just that's not what you're getting from Tatum, in my opinion.
I agree. All right, let's make our picks. I'm still saying. My finals are not going to stay. They're not going to change. It's Milwaukee. It's Golden State. I'm staying the course, Mike. Staying the course.
Okay. All right. I'm going to stay Milwaukee and Phoenix. I'll stay where I am. I'm going to go, if I go through each series, Milwaukee in 6, Miami in 6, Phoenix in 7, and Memphis in 5. Sorry. Golden State in 5.
Okay, so I would go Golden State in 5. I'm going to say Miami in 6. I'm going to say Milwaukee in 7. And I'm going to say I'm saying Dallas in 7. That's what I said. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with it, Mike.
All right.
I got one dad joke. That's it tonight, Mike. One dad joke.
All right, well, you might have to carry us because I didn't do any research tonight, unless I can find in my old notes one that I didn't share before. So go ahead and tell yours. I'll see if I can find one.
So my friend started dating a girl from the country, Mike. You know what the secret was?
No.
He started to attract her.
Oh, nice. I like it. That's a good one.
Okay, here we go. Did you hear about the elevator that was telling the jokes?
No, I didn't.
They worked on so many levels.
Nice, that's a good one. I got a knock-knock joke for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Billy Joe Jim Bob.
Billy Joe Jim Bob who?
How many Billy Joe Jim Bobs do you know?
All right, we're ending it there, Mike.
All right,
it's 12:52.
Yeah, that's it. All right, we are done. Thanks for checking us out tonight. Really appreciate you listening to this NBA episode of the Hoopheads podcast. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Hoopheads Pod. Please check out this week's episode. On Monday, we put up an episode with Tim Jackson, author of Understanding College Athletics Through the Eyes of College Athletes. So it kind of gives a behind-the-scenes look of what it's really like to be a college basketball player and a college athlete. Covers all sports. So please check out that episode with Tim. Check out his book, which you can find on Amazon. And then coming up on Friday, we have an episode with Coach Brian Burton. Brian is a longtime college basketball assistant coach at both the JUCO and Division I level. And he's also doing some color commentary on college basketball for ESPN. And he also works with the Rising Coaches. He's doing a lot of different things. And you'll learn more about all that in the episode that we're putting up on Friday. So please check those out. And again, we appreciate you joining us for this NBA episode and continue to enjoy the NBA playoffs. Next week, by the time we get back together, we will have our conference finals set. So we'll be talking Final Four of the NBA. So thanks for listening tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.